Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. I am very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to start soon, so please get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor, with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair, with your feet flat on the floor, unless that's uncomfortable. You know what? You know how to sit, so please find a comfortable seated position that is also feels uplifted. And I'm especially happy to practice with you during this very, very crazy time, super intense, super stressful, scary. It's a very hard time. I don't have to explain why I say that, so I won't. And I wish with all my heart that I could hop in to your inbox and say, hey, I'm a Buddhist lady with some good ideas for how to feel less fear or anxiety. And I do. I have some. I'm fixing to share them with you. But first, let me say that often when we hear suggestions, some of which are brilliant, on how to work with our inner state, all the work that is suggested is on the inner state. Not interstate. How do I work with my state of mind? How do I pacify? How do I calm? How do I put my energy into something that helps me to feel less freaked out? And those are, you know, very important things to consider. But in the Buddhist tradition, as I was trained, interestingly, I think, the suggestions I have found most helpful are not about my inner life. They're not about loving kindness. They're not about compassion. They're not about any things that one might expect. They're about the outer world. They're about your environment. And I'm going to share with you some thoughts about the environment and what I mean by that. And spoiler alert, I believe it's going to sound on first hearing, it kind of cheesy. And maybe it is. You'll have to try these things for yourself and see, for they are not. That's my conclusion. So in this view, there's the idea that, yeah, do what you can to feel confident and strong in yourself. But you can also create an environment from which you draw strength, from which you draw courage, from which you draw stability. And I'm going to suggest four things to do to create that sense of stability in your world. Because then when you go out into the world, whether you walk out your door or open your email or whatever it is, you'll feel like I am grounded. I am rooted in a space that supports me. And I can't fix the world. I can do my part. And so can you, and we must. But what I can do is fix my world so that it gives me strength, as mentioned, and goes beyond just giving me personal strength. In this particular view, it creates a magnetizing things. It's something that helps others too, easier way to say it. So the first thing that I suggest is that you have a ritual to start your day or end your day if you're not a morning person, that you have some kind of a ritual, not a practice. I mean, your ritual can include a practice, but I'm talking about a way of touching in with yourself, communicating with yourself. And you do this thing every day or most days as best you can. And I'm going to tell you what my ritual is. And then hopefully that will be some kind of a inspiration or give you at least some ideas for how you might create yours. Now, this ritual can take 10 minutes. It doesn't have to take all day. But what I do is I have a shrine and on it, it's behind me. And on it are things that are very personally meaningful to me. A picture of my teacher, right there. Something someone gave me that I think is beautiful. Candles, see them back there. And various things that are important to me, that I aspire to, that help me remember what I'm doing. And I light three candles. And as I'm doing this candle lighting, it's not just nice, oh, pretty, yeah, shrines usually have candles on them. It's like I'm lighting the pathway between me and this, between me and wisdom, between me and teachers I love, between me and what I aspire to. I usually, you know, in my life, I'm like, I'm in the dark. I don't know where I'm going. What's happening? And when I light the candles, there's this sense of, I'm turning on the light in the room. Let's see each other. Let's see what's happening. At the same time, just lighting candles. So it's not a particularly a big deal. But when I start that way, I'm like, okay, y'all are my people and I'm connecting with you and I'm offering warmth and light and beauty to begin my day or begin my ritual. Then I have a meditation practice, as you might have guessed. And I do that practice. But before I do it, I chant. You don't have to chant, but I have a traditional practice. So I say traditional chants to invoke further the presence, the felt sense within me of these teachers that I have gained so much from. For me, I'll just tell you, you don't have to do these things, but I start my practice with something called the four lines of Gampopa, which are quite exceptional. It's the entire path to liberation in four sentences. Gampopa was a great sage of the Kagyu lineage. Then I chant something else called the seven-line supplication, which is connected to my Nyingma Buddhist tradition that I practice in. You don't have to do these things. And then I chant the Heart Sutra, the Prajnaparamita Sutra, which is an inscrutable and inexplicable reminder of the impermanence of everything and the joy that accompanies recognition of that impermanence. Can't explain that one to you because I've not accomplished it, but every day for probably more than 30 years, I've said this. I have said the Prajnaparamita Sutra. And I remind myself every day, and one day, perhaps in a reminder, I will get it. And when I'm swimming, by the way, or I swim every morning here in Austin, Texas, I say the Heart Sutra to myself silently. So you, what do you say? Before you do your meditation or your spiritual practice, you could say something. Please help me. Thank you for teaching me. And name the people that have taught you that you're grateful to. You could write it down so that you remember it the next morning or evening, you say it again. Repetition is really important in ritual. Then you do your practice, 5 minutes, 5 years, whatever it is, doesn't matter, in this moment. And then at the end of your practice, rouse the aspiration in whatever way makes sense to you, that your practice, even if you fell asleep, even if you just bitched at the world, even if you felt, you know, blissful love, whatever it is, you offer it so that it can help others. That's very important. At the end of your practice, you say, I hope my practice can help everyone I encounter today and everyone I don't encounter, that it could set off reverberations that would be of use to my fellow humans. So some kind of a ritual. I'll also say, I'm being very personal right now, I've written my own little chant. I hope I'm allowed to do that because I did it. And I say it every day. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It's short. You could write your own. So in the Buddhist tradition I was trained in, chants start with a seed syllable like om. Mine starts with hum. Trying to remember it. By the power and blessings of the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and the three roots, means something in my tradition, may all the richness and radiance of my personal mandala expand and grow without ever declining, so that I may transmit the Dharma with joy for the benefit of all sentient beings. And then I close with a mantra that's personally meaningful to me. Guru Padma Siddhi Om. So you, little formula here is, hey, everybody, powerful wisdom beings, emanations that hold answers. Hi, I want something for myself. For me, in my case, it's what I call the richness and radiance of my personal mandala, which means my world, my work, my relationships, my, you know, headaches, my friendships, my grocery list. Can all of that become a mandala that is rich and radiant so that I can transmit the Dharma with joy? That's what I want to do. You want to do what you want to do. So you can experiment with these few lines of calling on wisdom, expressing a desire, and then dedicating it. It's not, I want to transmit the Dharma with joy. I do. I want to transmit the Dharma with joy for the benefit of all sentient beings. So that's me. That's my ritual. Now, there are three more steps. And if you've been in the Open Heart Project for any time, you may have heard them, but please hear them again. Actually, there's five, but I'm only going to talk about three. So this is about arranging our world. First, there's a ritual that you do. Powerful. Then the next step, sounds silly, clean up your room. I know I sound like your mom right now. Clean up your space. Whether your space is, you know, a 6,000 square foot house, you know, would take some time to do, or your bedroom, or your car, or your office, or the area around your shrine table, if you have one, clean it. And I really mean that there's something powerful in that. You are respecting yourself, you're respecting your space, you're putting things in order in the environment so that when you come back, you're like, yes, I've respected myself. And when you respect yourself and your space, you gain strength. When you're like, everything sucks, the world is terrible, I get that. I'm not gonna just leave the sink full of dishes, I'll just do my laundry later. I'm not trying to say, you know, anything persnickety. I'm trying to say, when you make these gestures of care, you are expressing your elegance and your dignity. And at times of great stress, it's easy to lose any sense of elegance and dignity. So I'm rambling a little bit here. I just taught a retreat here in Austin in my house for 4.5 days. And it was wonderful. I loved it. I hope the people that were here loved it. And when they left, I wanted to come back into my house as myself because there had been, you know, multiple people there and they were great. It wasn't like I was trying to get rid of anything. But when I asked myself, what do I want to do besides, you know, clean up, put things away? I wanted to shampoo the carpet. So I shampooed the bejesuses out of that carpet. And then I felt like, okay, I can settle here. And you need a place to settle your mind, your heart, your body. And when it's in disarray, it creates an echo of disarray. The second step is to wear nice clothes. Obviously I'm not dressing. This is from The Gap. This is from Target. But I like these clothes and they're clean. So all it means is wear things that are clean, that you have cared for. And when you put them on your body, that is a further expression of respect and care for yourself. So when you walk out of the house and you picked your sweats up off the floor, you don't feel so great. But when you take something clean out of the closet, even if it comes from Target, it's different. It changes your state of mind. So these are environmental things from which you can draw strength. And the final step that I'm going to mention today is eat food that nourishes you. And I don't mean be a vegan or go keto. I am on the keto diet, by the way, for 3+ years. I don't mean that, though. I mean, eat what feels nourishing to you. You know, if you want to eat cookies, get some damn good cookies. If you want to be, I don't know, a vegan, then just get good vegetables and good things that vegans eat. So these things, my space, my clothing, how I feed myself, if you only pay attention to those three things, your life will change. I don't know how, but it will. And you establish an environment of sanity and respect. And to conclude, I'll just repeat what I said earlier, which is we want to create an environment from which we can regain confidence and stability and reduce anxiety. And again, usually those efforts are the efforts counseled are about working with your inner state of mind. That's good. But when you add to this, add this piece, I'm working with my environment, my world. It gives a power to you. So don't take my word for that. Try it and let me know. So we're going to sit. I already lit my shrine, so I did that part. And I said my chants when I was swimming this morning, so I did that part. In any case. Please begin by imagining that all the words I said and all the things you heard are kind of like snowflakes that are settling to the ground and melting. You don't need to hold on to them. They're dissolving. Let your hands rest, palms down, mid-thigh somewhere. Feel the strength of your back body. It's powerful. And the softness of your front body. Tender. Relax your belly, the area around your heart, and your throat. Soft and open. Strong back can support it all. Let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. The breath is natural. In and out through the nose, unless you have a cold or allergies, but just regular breathing. And the eyes are open. And the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And the eyes are soft. And the gaze is soft. And we are connecting with our environment. We're not trying to withdraw from it. That's the start of this confidence. I'm connecting with my environment. At the same time, you're just sitting there doing nothing. So let your attention rest on the breath, the feeling of the body breathing. Feel the inhale and a little expansion, and the exhale has a kind of dissolving quality. So you're just feeling the body breathe. Thoughts come and go, period. The number of thoughts that have come without going is zero. So they all just sort of flow by. Big ones, small ones, and so forth. Just allow that while your primary attention is on the breath. And should you notice that you have become absorbed in a line of thought, not a thought, like a line of thought to the point where you're like, am I breathing? You forgot your breath. Good. Notice that. Don't just push it away. You sort of touch the line of thought with your attention. And you could label it silently, thinking, that's a thought, and then let go. Come back to this breath and begin again, just breathing together. Thank you so much for your practice. It's very important. And thank you for practicing with me. It makes me feel happy in my life. And thank you for practicing together. See you next time.